Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I was feeling like this was my last chance to go. And
so let's just park him at the hospital. If anyone shows sign of weakness, we set them on the side of the trail and they're on their own.
You know, he would have been fine in the hospital. They would have taken good care of him. They probably would have figured out what was wrong with his foot. This is the Dear Bob and Sue podcast, stories from our journey to all the U.S. national parks and other public lands. I'm Karen Smith.
And I'm Matt Smith. We're the authors of the Dear Bob and Sue series of books. Today is our monthly mailbag episode, where we answer questions from listeners about the national parks, road trips, hiking trails, camping, backpacking, and other travel-related topics.
Today, we'll be talking about a state park that's been in the news recently that you're going to want to visit, as well as a charming town on the Columbia River where you can walk in the footsteps of Lewis and Clark.
And we'll give our opinion about some fun scrambling hikes for teenagers in southern Utah, as well as advice on hiking down into the Grand Canyon to the remote Havasu Falls area. All this and more coming up next.
Good morning. We are happy to be back with our mailbag episode. We had to switch things up a little. As most of you know, mailbag is usually the last Thursday of the month, but we've been a little bit under the weather.
Right. That's the thing about having a podcast is if you have a cold, you can't record. And so, you just have to wait until you're better and then start recording again. So anyway, that's why we had to take a little bit of a break.
Yeah, a lot of sickness going around, unfortunately. Hope you all are feeling good. We are on the road to recovery, so hopefully our voices don't sound too nasally. But yeah, it's good to be back.
Yeah, so Karen, before we get into our questions, let's start with park news.
I love park news. And this is a big one. This came as a complete surprise to us, mainly because we had never heard of this state park. It's called Crater of Diamonds State Park, and it's located in Murfreesboro, Arkansas, which is a little over an hour from Hot Springs National Park.
Yeah, we saw this article about a visitor on January 11th found a 7.5 carat brown diamond at this park. He was from France visiting and wanted to fit in a visit to this park just by happen chance at the end of his trip. And then he found this huge diamond. And Karen, I am surprised that since this happened on January 11th, and that was like 3 weeks ago, that we haven't made a trip to Craters of Diamond State Park yet. It's been 3 weeks.
Well, if we hadn't been sick and we had some travels in there, we would have made a beeline. And I'm just wondering, too, how many people, because, you know, this was pretty widely publicized. I wonder now how many people are at that park searching for diamonds.
I'm guessing that they have a surge in visitorship.
I bet they do, because this park is one of the only places in the world where the public can search for real diamonds in their original volcanic source. And I guess visitors come from all over the world to search this one particular 37-acre field for a variety of rocks, not just diamonds, but also minerals and other gemstones.
Yeah, and there are not a lot of places in the United States where you can find diamonds. Matter of fact, it's maybe one of the only places. There is a high concentration of diamonds in South Africa or southern part of the African continent. There's other parts of the world that have concentration of diamonds. Not a lot in the United States. And this just happens to be a state park. And like you said, when you visit this park, they have a finders keepers policy. So if you find a diamond, it's yours.
And they facilitate you searching for diamonds because, I mean, you can bring your own mining equipment if you happen to have that, as long as it's not battery operated or motor driven. But you can also rent tools from the park and they'll help you identify what you find and all kinds of things. So I think this is amazing.
Yeah, they'll help you any way they can. They're very facilitating. They're encouraging people to look around. You know what they do? They even plow the ground. Now, they do this. They try to do it once a month. And sometimes because of weather or muddy conditions, they can't do it. So they try to plow these rows to kind of freshen, like pull up some of the diamonds from underneath so that people aren't digging like 20-foot holes.
Right. So, Matt, as our resident geologist, I have a question for you that I'm sure everyone is wondering like I am. Why in the world are there diamonds in Murfreesboro, Arkansas?
Yeah, that's a good question. And being the geology expert, I'll try to explain it in terms that you can understand.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that, Matt. Dumb it down for me.
Well, I mean, the diamonds in Arkansas were created the same way as you find diamonds all over the world. Essentially, a diamond is just compressed carbon. And so there's tons of carbon on the planet, in the Earth's crust. And generally, like from 50 to 100 miles beneath the surface in the Earth's crust is where a lot of that carbon is compressed because of heat and time and pressure. And so there's a lot of diamonds down there, but they don't make it to the surface. So every now and then with the tectonic plates moving and other parts of the Earth moving, you could have cracks in the crust that cause this pressure. There's a lot of pressure beneath the Earth's mantle. It creates vents where it pushes this pressure up. And so any material that's down there gets shot up to the surface in these little vents. Just one that happened to be in Arkansas like 100 million years ago. And it just essentially spews all this material that was deep in the earth. And in that material, you're going to find diamonds. And so it just kind of all accumulated in this one spot. And that's how these areas happen all over the planet. Just so happens that there's not many of them in the United States.
It's a shame that there isn't one in our backyard.
Yeah, well, you could dig there. I think somebody would know before now.
I think probably
that there would be diamonds in our backyard.
So I didn't realize this until I started doing some research, but diamonds come in all colors of the rainbow. And the three particular colors that are found in Crater of Diamonds State Park are white, brown, and yellow. And then some of the other rocks and minerals that you can find there are amethyst, garnet, jasper, agate, and quartz. So it's a smorgasbord of rocks and minerals there.
Yeah, it's a geologist's dream. They say that over 35,000 diamonds have been found in that park since it became a park in 1972. Yeah, and they've found some big ones. I mean, the guy they've just found, you know, is over 7 carats recently. That was a brown diamond, but yeah, there's some pretty famous diamonds that have been found there.
Yeah, I jotted a few down. So there is the Amarillo Starlight Diamond, which is 16.5 carats. There's the Star of Arkansas, which is about 15.5 carats. And then there's the Esperanza Diamond, that's about 8.5 carats. But Matt, the most notable might be the 3-carat Strawn Wagner Diamond, which was found in 1990. And do you know why?
Yes, because I read the outline. It is a near flawless diamond.
That's right. It's one of the few colorless, internally flawless diamonds ever found. So this diamond was cut to just a little over 1 carat in 1997, and it was graded perfect by the Gemological Institute of America. Apparently, this diamond is considered one in a billion, and it's so perfect and so rare that most jewelers and gemologists never see one during their lifetime. And what's very cool is that this particular diamond is on permanent display at the park's visitor center because the park raised $35,000 to buy it.
There you go. So that is what's waiting for you amongst the plowed rows in Arkansas. We're going to have to go there.
We are definitely going to have to go there. You know, it would have been kind of a nice little Valentine's Day trip.
Hey, honey, get your bucket and your sieve. We're going to go dig in the dirt.
Happy Valentine's Day.
I'm not going to buy you a diamond. I'm going to buy you a trip where you can find your own.
Best of luck to you. The romance is alive and well. Anyway, you might want to check out Crater of Diamonds State Park if you go visit Hot Springs National Park. And it might not be as simple as it sounds to find a diamond. Apparently, this visitor from France dug in the soil all morning, and then he gave up because it was such hard work. And he was literally just walking through the field, looking down, and he found this brown diamond, which, by the way, I saw a photo of it. It looks just like a little round, bumpy brown pebble. So now I'm kind of worried I may have come across some of these things previously and just ignored them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the lesson there is like sometimes just try easy.
Exactly.
A lesson in life. Anyway, exactly. So yeah, we should go. We definitely should go. Mm-hmm. I think you need to manage your expectations.
For sure. All right. So that's an exciting little bit of news about our public lands. And I think, should we just jump into mailbag, Matt?
Yeah. We have a few questions today.
We do.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. What's our first question?
All right, this one comes from Mark in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and he wrote, I'm going to be visiting Mount Rainier National Park in July, and from there, I'm heading to Cannon Beach, Oregon. Are there any places that I shouldn't miss along the way? Any interesting stops to break up the drive?
There are a bunch of interesting mm-hmm. little places, and thank you for the question, because a lot of times you do have to kind of ask the locals.
Right.
One of the stops we were going to suggest is Mount St. Helens National Volcanic Monument, specifically the Johnston Ridge Observatory. However, last summer there was a huge landslide on a section of the Spirit Lake Highway, the only road that takes you to that observatory, and they had to close it down.
Yeah, we were hoping that they'd be able to get the road cleared and reopened this summer, 2024. But today, like an hour ago, we saw a local news article that said the road won't be passable again until 2026. Can you believe that?
Yes, I can, unfortunately.
My goodness, this is really unfortunate because the Johnston Ridge Observatory is a place that everyone should visit.
So, Mark, though, you could stop by the Mount St. Helens Visitor Center. That's still open. It's only about 5 miles off of I-5 on that Spirit Lake Highway. The landslide happened past the Visitor Center, and it affects just the Johnston Ridge Observatory. So, yeah, you could do that. Okay, thanks for your question, Mark.
Oh, no. We're not just going to tell you what you can't do. We actually have another suggestion for you, and that would be the charming town of Astoria, Oregon.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The most direct route from Mount Rainier to Cannon Beach would take you right through Astoria, and it's definitely worth a stop.
Yes, I think the city of Astoria is darling. It's in the very northwestern corner of Oregon at the mouth of the Columbia River. So the Columbia River is the border between Washington State and Oregon State. And, you know, Astoria is not very big. It's got about 10,000 people who live there. But it's one of the oldest American settlements west of the Rocky Mountains. And the way it got its name is, in 1811, John Jacob Astor, a fur trader and real estate mogul, sent fur traders to the area who opened a trading post called Fort Astoria. Astoria for Astor, John Jacob Astor.
Just think about that. That That was a long time ago to have a little fort there already established.
Yes.
In the wilderness.
Yes. Now, in current day, the reason you might want to stop is because there are art galleries, restaurants, breweries, shops. You can also drive around to see some of the beautiful Victorian and craftsman homes. Now, when we're driving from Seattle to Cannon Beach, we always stop here for lunch. And there's a couple good breweries that we found that also serve food.
Right. There's the Astoria Brewing Company. There's also Fort George Brewery. I love Fort George's stout beers.
Yes.
Imperial stout beers. Fort George also has pizza. We've been to both of these places, and they're both good to stop and eat and have a beer.
Right. And the other thing you can do in Astoria is you can visit a National Park Service site, and that would be Lewis and Clark National and State Historical Park.
We have visited that. It is the home of Fort Clatsop, which was the winter encampment for Lewis and Clark when they came. And they spent from December 1805 to March 1806 there.
So they found this location, and it offered a lot of game to hunt, a lot of elk are in that area, and it had close proximity to the ocean. So Clark sketched a preliminary site plan, and they began construction in early December. So the fort was completed by January 1st, and it housed, I love it, the National Park Service says it this way, it housed 32 men, one woman, a baby, and a dog.
It's a very, very detailed census
well,
there.
Well, it is, but what they don't tell you is who the woman was, the very, very, very famous woman.
Yeah, I know who that is because I've been there.
Yes.
It's Sacagawea, which is the wrong way to pronounce it, but that's, hey, I went to school in the 1960s and 70s, and back then, they taught us it was Sacagawea.
Right. And now scholars believe that it's pronounced Sacagawea, and the baby was her son, Jean-Baptiste Charbonneau. So the baby's father was Toussaint Charbonneau, a French-Canadian fur trapper who joined the Lewis and Clark expedition as an interpreter. And Sacagawea was the explorer's interpreter among the Shoshone Indians. So a very famous resident there. Well, actually, lots of famous ones, Lewis and Clark and Sacagawea. Now, one thing to note, this is not the original fort. There was nothing left of the fort, so they rebuilt it based on drawings and things that were written about it. But you can walk through. There are also a few hiking trails in that area.
Okay, but I would like to know, who was the dog?
The dog?
Yeah, you said there was a woman and a baby and a dog. What kind of dog was it?
Oh, the dog.
What was the dog's name?
I don't know. You know what? Hold on a second. Let me look it up right now.
Okay.
Okay.
You got it there?
I've got it. Okay. The dog, his name was Seaman.
Okay. You're making this up.
No, not that Seaman. Seaman. S-E-A-M-A-N. Like a seaman. Seaman.
Yeah, that's
seaman.
That's what I thought.
Okay. So here's a picture of him. Well, it's actually not a real picture. It's a drawing. It looks like he was a Newfoundland dog. You know, one of those big Newfoundlands?
This is a podcast. They cannot see. They cannot see the drawing of.
Okay, well, I'm describing it. He's a big. Dog. He was a big Newfoundland dog. So it says here, Seaman helped hunt beavers. He caught a goat in the water once, and he assisted hunting parties in carrying back their catches. Oh, listen to this. On more than one occasion, he saved his humans from charging bison, and he alerted the party to presence of bears along the upper Missouri River.
So he was a working dog.
He was a working
dog.
Yeah,
he was earning his feed.
And I guess I'm just still scanning this. I guess the Shoshone Indians really liked the dog. In fact, one Indian offered to buy Seaman for 3 beaver skins.
Okay, let's just move on.
Well, you asked about the dog. Okay, so Sacagawea, her baby, and Seaman the dog. How's that?
That's great.
Anyway, I guess during the busy season, which I believe would be summer, they do have rangers in costume, and there are ranger-led programs. There's also a visitor center with a museum, a bookstore, a couple of movies. And yeah, Astoria is a great stop because breweries and an NPS historical site. I don't know, Matt, what more could you want?
How about a pig and a pancake? Do they have one of those?
You know, Matt, actually, they do have a pig and a pancake restaurant in Astoria. We haven't stopped there because we've been so preoccupied with the breweries.
Why have we not ever been to a pig and pancake? We're always on the outside looking in.
I know, we are. And so, Mark, just note, in Cannon Beach, there is a pig and a pancake. You know, this is obviously by the name, a breakfast place. So definitely check that out and let us know how it is because Matt is only dreaming.
We're never going to go.
Right, right.
There's another stop we didn't mention, and that's Cape Disappointment State Park. It's just across the river from Astoria, it's on the Washington State side. So for Lewis and Clark history buffs, there's a Lewis and Clark Interpretive Center there, as well as a lighthouse, a really well-restored lighthouse, the North Head Lighthouse. We must have been there like within weeks of when they finished that restoration because it was all sparkling and clean.
Yes, actually a lot of great stops along there. And, you know, we are planning to do sometime in the next several months, we're going to do an episode about the Oregon coast from the northern tip to the southern tip and all of the really incredible things to do. So that's in the works.
Yeah. Okay, Mark, there you go. There's a few ideas for you. And don't forget to buy your day use reservation for Mount Rainier.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
All right, Karen, what is our next question?
All right, this one comes from Christy, and she wrote, my family was just talking about the Beehive Trail in Acadia and wondering if there are similar trails in other areas. It was super popular with my kids, ages 12 and 14. My youngest doesn't like hiking and didn't complain at all on the Beehive Trail. We are headed to the Mighty Five and Grand Canyon early this summer, and recommendations are welcome. So that's her question. I did email her back and ask specifically what they liked about the Beehive Trail. And I had a feeling I already knew, but she did confirm that they liked climbing the ladders and scrambling on the rocks.
Oh, yeah.
Who wouldn't?
Young teenagers, 12 and 14.
Right.
They're like monkeys. They'll love climbing over stuff. And Utah has plenty of places that 12 and 14-year-olds can climb all over.
Actually, Utah might be the very best state for fun scrambling hiking. So we'll just give you a couple of suggestions for Utah specifically. In Arches, definitely try to get permits for the Fiery Furnace. Now, you have to reserve those ahead of time on recreation.gov. At least 2 days ahead of your trip, they do go up for grabs 7 days in advance.
So maximum.
Maximum of 7 days.
So if you're trying to get them a month ahead, you're not going to find it available.
Right, right. And they go really fast. So this is one of those things you need to be on your computer, you know, logged into recreation.gov the second they go up. But we loved that particular trail.
I know we say this often about, you know, you got to be on your computer or on your phone, whatever, like the day of, the minute of these things go on sale or come up for grabs. You know, that's just the reality now of going to a lot of these public lands. And like, that's no joke. We spend a lot of time keeping track of deadlines and getting permits and things like literally the minute they come up. So that's kind of one of the things you have to do these days if you want to go to these popular places.
Absolutely, because everyone wants to do these things. Now, the Fiery Furnace will probably take you about a half of a day, assuming you don't get lost too many times. But this is fun for kids of all ages because there is scrambling and crawling, and you're searching for these little tiny arrows to find your way out of these dead-end spots. And I think it would be perfect for your kids and you.
Yeah, and some of those dead ends are fun to explore, even though you know it's not the right direction. Right. You just to scramble over. So you got that fiery furnace in Arches. Also in Zion National Park, you know, the Zion Narrows would be a great hike for kids and in your case, you know, young teens, just hiking up the Virgin River through a slot canyon.
Right. And you do not need to get a permit ahead of time for this. So you can just show up. Now, our advice would be go early in the morning before it gets too crowded. But this is really fun because your kids can splash in the water. If they want to swim, they can. We loved the Zion Narrows hike.
Yeah. And there's a kind of a smaller version of this kind of a hike in Kanara, Utah, which is not far outside of Zion. It's Kanara Falls. Now, that one also, you need to get a permit online to do that one.
Right. Now, it's not terribly difficult to get a permit as long as you're, you know, a few weeks out. It's not like a lottery or anything like some of the other permits. But that one is fun. It's less crowded than the Zion Narrows because they limit the number of people per day. But again, you are hiking through a creek, through a slot canyon, and then up this really tall ladder that's next to a waterfall.
Also, not too far outside of Bryce Canyon National Park, in Escalante Grand Staircase National Monument is Willis Creek. It's a little slot canyon that you can hike into.
Right. Also, you are walking through water in this one. This one is a little easier, a little more gentle. Again, you do not need a permit for this one. You know, pretty much any slot canyon is going to be great for your kids because it's just such a fun experience.
Okay, kind of back towards the Moab area is Canyonlands National Park. Now, Canyonlands has several districts, and we're talking about the Island in the Sky District, which is the one closest to Moab. And there's a trail in that district called the Aztec Butte Trail, and that would be a fun scramble. There's a couple of scrambles because there's the Aztec Butte that you go up. Now, you got to be careful because it's a little steep in places, and you do that. But also then there's this little spur trail off of that where you can go to the granaries. Those are both, they're not very long, and those are kind of fun.
They are fun. And when you get, after you scramble up this rock face to the top of the butte, then there's a trail that circles the perimeter of the butte. Gorgeous views. And every time we've done it, there has been no one up there but us because it is a little bit tricky to get up there. But if we can do it, your 12 and 14-year-old will be able to do it for sure.
You're definitely going to want to have some good treads on the bottom of your shoes, all of you, so you have a grip on that slick rock.
And then just a few more in Capitol Reef. There is the Sulphur Creek hike that you can do from the visitor center. Again, you're hiking through a creek, and that's always fun. There are also some slot canyons off of Nottam Bullfrog Road. We have talked about a couple that we've done. So you could check those out as well when you're in Capitol Reef.
And when you're driving between Capitol Reef and Arches, you'll pass a turnoff to Goblin Valley State Park. This is while you're on Highway 24. And when you're in Goblin Valley State Park, I mean, just hiking through the valley itself is fun for kids. But there's also a hike called Goblin's Lair, and it's about 2.3 miles round trip. We have not done this hike, but we've read a lot of reviews and reports from people who have taken kids on it, and they say kids love it.
And lastly, in that same area, just a few miles from Goblin Valley State Park, is Little Wild Horse Canyon. That's a slot canyon. That's very fun. So, you know, Utah is just chock full of places like that where kids can, you know, they can be kids and they can climb and scramble and have such a wonderful time. So check out some of these places or Google slot canyons in the areas that you are. Make sure that they are non-technical slot canyons. That makes a big difference.
And be aware of the weather forecast. If there's storms in the area and downpours can create flash floods, and these slot canyons can be really dangerous when those flash floods happen. So just be aware of the forecast.
So Christy, well, we hope these suggestions help. You know, it's wonderful that you are seeking out fun activities for your kids in these parks because they're going to remember these experiences fondly as, you know, my parents took me to the national parks and I had the time of my life.
Yeah, it's great to have places where kids can scramble. Okay, Karen, what is our next question?
All right, this one comes from Erin in Lexington, Kentucky, and she wrote, "Dear Matt and Karen, I can't believe that my dream has finally come true. I was awarded a camping permit for Havasu Falls in June. I'm so happy, but I'm also scared about the hike down into the canyon and back up. I know you've done this one before, as well as Bright Angel Trail from the South Rim down to Phantom Ranch. Are they similar in difficulty, and how much do I need to train for this? I'm comfortable doing 5 to 7 mile hikes."
Okay, great question. And we do have some information to share on this one. But first of all, if people listening, they're not familiar with Havasu Falls, it's on land in Arizona belonging to the Havasu Indian tribe, the Havasupai people.
Right. So this is not public land. It's located in the Grand Canyon, but it's not part of Grand Canyon National Park. So Havasu Falls is famous for its turquoise waterfalls, and you need to get a permit to go there. Now, these permits are either to camp in the campground or stay in their lodge. There is no day hiking allowed in this entire area.
And Erin, if you listen to our podcast episode about that adventure, episode number 28, you might remember that we did it with our friends John and Lolly, and the day before, something weird happened to John's foot. He thinks it might have been a spider bite. Who knows what it was? I don't think they ever figured it out, but his foot was really swollen. I mean, like really swollen.
He could barely get his hiking boot on. And, you know, despite our continual suggestions that we cancel, John managed to limp his way down into the canyon.
Yeah, I don't know that it was our suggestion. I think that you and Lolly wanted to just drop him off at the hospital and go without him. Just park him at the hospital and go. You made the suggestion several times.
Well, okay, fair enough, we did. But going to Havasu Falls had been in my bucket for years. And, you know, it was, what, a year or two before that we tried to go and we got turned back because there was a monsoon and they closed it. So I was feeling like this was my last chance to go. And
so let's just park him at the hospital. If anyone shows sign of weakness, we set them on the side of the trail and they're on their own.
You know, he would have been fine in the hospital. They would have taken good care of him. They probably would have figured out what was wrong with his foot.
Did you ever ask John what he wanted?
Oh, he wanted to go. And you know what? He was a trooper. But we do not recommend Erin limping down into the canyon. You know, when we did this in 2016, kind of what spurred us to do this that particular year was in the fall, in September, we were going to do our first dory boat trip on the Colorado River. And that had us ending at Phantom Ranch and hiking up out of the canyon. So we figured that this Havasu Falls hike would be kind of a training hike for that particular hike.
Yeah, and it was a good training hike. I remember it being difficult, but not as difficult as I thought it would be.
Exactly. So we jotted down some numbers, some statistics, so you can kind of compare the two hikes. Now, Havasu Falls hike, that starts, the elevation at the top is about 5,200 feet. That's where you're starting from. And hiking from the hilltop down to the campground is 10 miles and 2,400 feet of elevation change.
Yeah, but half of that elevation change, like literally like 1,200 feet of it, is in the first mile and a half. So you just, well, if you're going down, you're going steep pretty quick. And then the rest of it is fairly flat. Matter of fact, even coming back, I remember thinking that it didn't feel like you were going uphill. That last mile does feel like you're definitely going uphill when you're coming out.
Yeah, there's 8.5 miles of the hike where you only have 1,200 feet of elevation change. So that seems fairly flat. But boy, that first mile and a half is really tough. Anyway, after 8 miles of hiking, you'll come to Supai Village. And if you want to, you can take a break. There's a little market there. You can get a cold drink. When we were there, they sold ice cream. So you could take a break in the village before going on to the campground, which is another 2 miles.
Right. When you get to the village, that is where you get to the visitor center where you have to show them your permit. You don't go all the way to the campground to show them your permit. You have to check in with the ranger. It's obvious where you do this. It's right as you enter the village.
And, you know, before you get to the campground, you do pass Havasu Falls on the way to the campground. So you'll get to see that, which is, of course, one of the reasons that you're going. So to compare it to the Bright Angel Trail down to Phantom Ranch, that trail, you're starting at an elevation of 6,860 feet. So what is that, Matt? About 1,400 feet higher in elevation. Now, it's similar mileage. It's also about 10 miles from the rim to Phantom Ranch.
Yeah, but it has about a 4,500-foot elevation change, so that's like twice as steep.
Right. Bright Angel Trail is harder, but, you know, we would encourage you and anyone who is attempting to hike down into Havasu Falls to train. You know, the more, the better shape you're in, the more comfortable you're going to be. And when you mentioned that you can hike 5 to 7 miles, you know, we don't know, like, is that at, you know, steep elevation changes, or is that, you know, walking around your neighborhood? So you want to be comfortable with the elevation. That's key.
Yeah, everyone's 5 to 7 miles is different. But yeah, the going down to the village and the campground, that's not the hard part. It's the coming out.
Definitely the coming out. And the other thing to note too, there is no shade on this trail. And when you're coming out, of course, Aaron, you're going to be carrying gear on your back. We didn't have that because we stayed at the lodge, so our packs were fairly light, and we were only going for one night. But as you're coming out, just remember, you're going to hit that hard spot, the end, that steep spot, you know, probably midday, even if you start out early. And so it's going to be full sun. It's going to be hot. You're going to be tired because you just hiked 8.5 miles before you get to the steep spot. So yeah, I mean, that will be probably your toughest part right there.
But we do have a hiking tip for you. This is a tip that we use often. You know, that last mile and a half, like we said, it's really hard. It's steep. And you're probably going to be hot at that point. So make sure you have enough water. But also, you could leave a cooler in your car with cold waters in there and then maybe some snacks.
You'll find out when you get there. But the parking lot, the trailhead for Havasu, is in the middle of nowhere. So once you get back to your car, you're going to be driving for a while before you are able to find some place to stop for drinks or snacks. So just make sure you have them in your car. And believe me, you will really appreciate it once you get up there.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because we are on the mailing list now for the Havasu Falls for the tribe there. And they did send us the notice at the beginning of the year about reservations. But Matt, I was surprised by how expensive it's gotten since we did it back in 2016.
Yeah, what does it cost?
Well, so they've changed it a little bit. In 2024, you have to book 3 nights. Whether you are camping or whether you're staying at the lodge, you can't do less than 3 nights. So the cost for camping for 3 nights is $455 per person. The lodge, the cost for 3 nights is $2,277.
What? For 3 nights?
Yes,
really?
I know. Huh. I know. I don't remember what we paid, but I think we paid like...
It wasn't that.
I think it was like $250 a night, which we thought was a lot back then. Mm-hmm. I know. Yeah. Now, the only maybe saving grace about this lodge would be that they do allow you to sleep 4 people per room. There are 2 double beds in each room. So if you went with another couple or if you went with 3 other people, whatever, you could split the cost with some other people, but it's a little room, and that would be a lot of togetherness.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's kind of expensive for, like, we didn't have hot water.
No.
So maybe that they have hot water now.
Maybe they have fixed it up.
Yeah, they could.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're not besmirching the lodge. It was a fine place to stay. I mean, we couldn't get campground spots anyway, so that was the only place we had to stay.
Yeah, we were grateful for a bed, and we were grateful there was a window air conditioner, and it was hot, and we were really grateful for the air conditioning, because I think we had hiked, didn't our GPS say it was 17 miles?
John's, the GPS on his watch said 17 miles, but I think he was also delirious from dragging his foot around. It might have been 10 miles. I don't know. He says it's 17 miles.
because one of the big attractions besides Havasu Falls is Mooney Falls. And Mooney Falls is another mile or so past the campground. So, you know, once we got to the village and we checked in, then we hiked to Havasu Falls, and then we hiked to the campground, and then we hiked to Mooney Falls, and then we had to turn around and hike back up to the lodge. So we did somewhere between, you know, I think 15 and 17 miles that day. And that was a lot for us.
Yeah. But it was a great day, and John was a trooper.
Oh my gosh. It was amazing that he was able to do it. So anyway, that's kind of a long answer to your question, Aaron. But yes, we think you should absolutely train for this hike so you're comfortable. There's no surprises. You know, you don't want to suffer.
That's right. We know this.
Right. It's going to be a lot more fun if you don't suffer. So I don't know what your options for training in Kentucky are in the winter, but, you know, maybe you just want to join a gym for a couple of months and get on the treadmill and get on that Stairmaster. That's what we have been doing lately this winter to try to stay in shape for summer hiking.
Okay. Thank you for your question, Aaron. Hope that helps and you have an incredible time down there.
That's right. Let us know how it goes.
Okay, Karen, do we have any more questions?
We have one more question from Jeff in Omaha, Nebraska, and he wrote, "Dear Matt and Karen, my wife and I will be visiting North Cascades National Park this summer, and we only have one full day in the park. We plan on hiking the Blue Lake and Maple Pass trails, and we'll stop at the Diablo Lake and Washington Pass overlooks. But we know that none of these are actually within the boundaries of the national park. Do you know of any place where we could fairly quickly cross the border into the park so we can say that we actually stepped foot in it?"
Yeah, that's a good question. We had the same question years ago when we were going to all the parks, even though this park's probably the closest of the national parks to our house. It can be a little confusing. But before we get into that answer, we need to explain something about this area and these public lands. The North Cascades, it's a complex of parks. So you got the North Cascades National Park, but also adjacent to it, you have Ross Lake National Recreation Area, and you have Lake Chelan National Recreation Area. And if you look at a map, they all look like one big green area, and they're actually managed as a unit. And so the borders between these different entities, there are three separate entities in the National Park Service system. The managers of this area, they don't really, it's not so important where the border is. The whole thing feels and looks like a national park.
Right. But while it might not be important to the managers of the park, it is important to a lot of people. It was important to us that we actually step foot in the park. And here's the thing a lot of visitors don't know. When you drive along the North Cascades Highway, which is Highway 20, and this runs through the center of the park complex, you're not in the national park. And as Jeff mentioned, those highlights where he's planning to visit, where most people visit, none of those are actually in the park. So what to do if you are particular about stepping foot in the park? Of course, there are a lot of long hikes that will take you into the national park within the boundaries, but we have an actually really quick suggestion for you, Jeff, and for anybody else who's interested.
So you can hike on the Bridge Creek Trail, and if you hike a mile or two on that trail, you'll come to the park border, and that's an easy trail to hike.
And you know what? This is something that most people don't know about, and they drive right past. We discovered this when we were doing a backpacking trip from North Cascades Highway at Bridge Creek to Stehekin. And we took a couple of days, but we discovered that very quickly we crossed into the national park boundary. So here's what you need to do, Jeff. On Highway 20, about mile marker 159, this is just a little over 1 mile east of Rainy Pass, you're going to come to a parking lot on the north side of the highway. So park there, you're going to cross the street to the trailhead, which coincidentally is the Pacific Crest Trail, and there's a big sign there. We have a photo of us standing in front of the sign.
Get your picture by the sign.
Right, and then you hike. I know it's more than a mile. I'm going to say it's just under 2 miles, and there are these these very cool old wooden signs that are, you know, nailed to trees that will kind of guide you because there are some different forks on this trail. But anyway, you will come to a marker that says North Cascades National Park. And this is a really pretty trail through the woods. And as Matt said earlier, it's very easy.
Right. So you can do that and then definitely cross the border into the park. Say you were there.
Right.
When you get to this area, it'll become more clear that the entire complex has the look and feel of a national park.
Oh my gosh, yes. And all of these spots, whether you're in Ross Lake National Recreation Area or even the National Forest, which is where the Maple Pass hike is, and Blue Lake, no matter where you are in this complex, it's gorgeous and it will absolutely be worth the trip out there.
Okay, so Jeff, those are some suggestions.
Yes, thank you so much for your question. And that's going to wrap it up for Mailbag today. If you have a mailbag question that you would like us to include in our next mailbag, please email it to us at mattandkarensmith@gmail.com.
Thanks for joining us today. And a special shout out to our listeners in Finland. We appreciate you tuning in.
We do. I would love to go to Finland. Isn't that supposed to be the happiest country in the world?
I don't know. Maybe it is. It's probably because they listen to our podcast, Karen, and it brings them so much happiness.
Wow, way to work that in, Matt.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll go and we'll find out.
Yes, we should go and see firsthand. All right. And for all of you new listeners out there, please follow us on Instagram at Matt and Karen Smith, because we post a lot of photos and videos of the places that we talk about in these episodes.
And if you'd like to receive some bonus content from us, please consider joining our Patreon account. It's $5 a month, less than a price of a beer in a brewery, Karen.
I like how you made that analogy.
So I'm not sure now people are going to think beer or Patreon. I think we might actually lose some Patreon followers. Okay, forget that. It's $5 a month. Thank you for your support.
Thank you. We appreciate it so much. We'll see you all next week.